As I've watched the leaves on the trees turn from green to red and orange and yellow during this rather late autumn of ours, I've been reminded of the miracle of life and the wonder of trees. And so on this Sunday before Thanksgiving, I give thanks for trees. Trees ask very little of us, but they stand there offering shade from the sun or shelter from the rain. The leaves do their part for photosynthesis, filter the air we breathe. Trees offer homes for squirrels and birds and adventuresome children. Trees are remarkably patient with us. They let us prune them and move them and saw them apart. And mostly, they go on living. And then something happens. Lightning strikes, the wind blows, disease takes hold, the dirt erodes, or time simply has its way with them, and trees fade and fall. Maybe the rain is not enough, maybe the rain is too much, maybe the temperatures rise. For some reason, the roots give way. A couple of weeks ago, a tree from our neighbor's yard fell into our backyard, knocking down the fence and stabbing a giant hole in my kayak. Certainly not the worst damage a tree can do, says Robert Benton in the choir, whose home was completely destroyed by a tree a few years ago. But trees have power. Paradoxically, even a dead tree can live in new ways. Now, some of you know that Brad Case, who's here on the front row, grew up in Hawaii. Brad's parents had a beautiful koa tree, pass that to you, in their backyard in Hawaii. There's a picture of that tree in the bulletin if you want to take a look at it. That tree provided the backdrop for their family weddings and picnics and parties. Give you that with instructions to come in just a moment. I'll leave you two for a reason I'll explain in a minute. That tree provided the backdrop for their family gatherings. And then, as happens with trees, that koa tree died. The tree grew old and a strong wind came along and brought it to the ground. And so Brad's parents set aside the wood, and Brad had an idea. To use some of that koa tree's wood for a new purpose. And so Brad found a woodworker in Hawaii, a man named Craig Mason, and Brad and Lee commissioned a new communion set for us to use at Westmoreland. We have a silver set, we have a pottery set, and now we have this beautiful wooden set that you may be able to see over the handbell tables. On this Sunday before Thanksgiving, I give thanks for this thoughtful, beautiful, generous gift. And so I've passed out pieces of that communion set, and I want you to take a look at it and pass it to the people who are seated near you. Brad, I'm going to ask you to do extra work. I don't want the people in the balcony to be left out, so if you would take the plate that you're holding to the balcony so they can be a part of this. Take a moment to look at the wood and to feel the wood and to experience that wood. And then wherever those pieces end up, whoever has it last in each portion of the congregation, when the ushers come forward when we sing the doxology to bring our tithes and offerings forward, if those of you who have those pieces of the communion set would also come forward from wherever you are and place those back on the table, that would be a great way for us all to take part in worship. Speaking of taking part in worship, we just need to recognize that our smoke alarm is beeping. That's how the smoke alarm likes to take place in worship as well. So if you can hear that beeping noise, just count it among our joyful voices. It happened last week as well. But as I've thought about trees, and as I've thought about leaves turning colors, and as I've thought about trees dying and becoming communion sets, it seems to me that societies and nations and communities are sometimes like trees also. Societies and nations and communities are planted, and they grow and they flourish, and sometimes it seems as if the roots won't hold firm. And the society or the nation or the community that once was proud and good and shade offering becomes diseased, or it splinters or breaks apart or even topples to the dirt. Some examples from very close by. Two Fridays ago at Westland Middle School, this excellent middle school just down the street here, the middle school, the public school that serves the children in this neighborhood. Two Fridays ago, someone drew swastikas on the wall of a restroom. Maybe you saw that on the news. A second example. On the night of Election Day, two Tuesdays ago, on the night after voting, someone went into the yard of our friends over at Christ Congregational United Church of Christ in Silver Spring. They have a Black Lives Matter banner, as do we, expressing support and solidarity. And on election night, someone cut out the phrase "black" from the sign at Christ Congregational. And two Saturdays ago, a banner advertising the Spanish language service at Our Savior Episcopal Church up in Silver Spring was also slashed. A banner in Spanish inviting people to worship God. And the words "Trump Nation, Whites Only" were painted on that banner. Swastikas, cutting out Black lives, slashing a Spanish language welcome sign. All right here in our county, in our hometown, in the past few days. These things grieve me terribly. They keep me awake at night. And they make me wonder about the roots of our civil society. They make me wonder about the health of our nation and the health of our souls as people. This is not new, of course. I've been reading Stoic philosophy of late. Marcus Aurelius said, "The times are again the same." The prophet Jeremiah, of whom we read a moment ago, lived in a complicated, unrooted time, a time much again the same. 2,600 years ago, Jeremiah was called the weeping prophet because he saw a world, a society, a community unraveled and unrooted and unhappy. He described it in the poetic language of the prophets. He talked about scattered sheep and unattended shepherds. He talked about a remnant living in fear and dismay. "But the days are surely coming," Jeremiah says, quoting God, "when I shall make a new covenant with my people. This is the covenant I will make with them, says our God. I will put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." A new covenant, says God. A new covenant with God's people, says Jeremiah. When I read that passage, I thought of Franklin Roosevelt in the New Deal. Not because God was copying from President Roosevelt, but because Roosevelt, in his speech laying out the New Deal, borrowed from the prophets. In 1932, as he accepted the nomination for the presidency in the middle of the Great Depression, Franklin Roosevelt said, "On the farms, in the large metropolitan areas, in the smaller cities and in the villages, millions of our citizens cherish the hope that their old standards of living and of thought have not gone forever. Those millions cannot and shall not hope in vain. I pledge you, I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people. Let us all here assembled constitute ourselves prophets of a new order of competence and of courage. Give me your help, not to win votes alone, but to win in this work to restore America to its own people." When I read Jeremiah, what I hear God saying is that God promises an old New Deal. That is, God promises a new order, a new possibility, a new way of being. And God invites us into that hard work of living out this new covenant. My family's a big fan of the New Deal because it brought electricity to my grandparents' farms when they were children. They were not poor or illiterate. They just lived out in the country. And electric lines did not reach them. And so when the New Deal came along bringing them electricity, they were so happy to do the hard work of joining rural electric co-ops to make sure that they and their neighbors had electricity. The New Deal was hard work. It's hard work to run an electric co-op and bring lights to farms all over East Texas. I think they liked the New Deal because they were invited into it. It offered them a new way of being. And I am more convinced than ever before, that we as Christians must live differently. It pains me to know that swastikas are scribbled on bathroom walls, that signs affirming black lives are cut apart, that hate speech is painted over a banner of welcome. It pains me. But at the same time, it is clarifying. I am as convinced as never before that the church is called to the hard work of being the church. Last week, I preached in big, broad terms, and you stood and clapped. Let me say, it's easy to preach, and it's easy to stand and clap. But it may be painful to have God write a new covenant on our hearts. Open heart surgery is painful business. Enacting a new deal, a new covenant, a new way of being is hard work. Living as people newly committed to God's justice means that we must not be complacent. Do you know what I think is the main enemy of God's new covenant for us? The word busy. Oh, I'm so busy. I just can't. Whatever it is, I'm so busy. I think we should banish that word from our vocabulary. Stop using the word busy. And instead recognize that each of us has the gift of days of light and darkness, 24 hours as we mark it off by the clock, and find ways to prioritize our living so that we may be the hands and feet of God in the world. I think most of us know that it is not right to be too busy to be about God's work in the world, and so we feel guilty about that. And I think some of us, because we are people of privilege, assuage our guilt by writing a check. And checks are good, and checks with lots of zeros are even better. And the world needs your money if you have it to give. But the world, this world, our community, this day needs you. The world needs you to show up and to be present. In your bulletins this morning is this brochure, Ways to Care for the World. I invite you to take that home and read it thoroughly after our congregational meeting today. All of the organizations that our church partners with are described in that brochure. Those groups that receive money through our social justice and action grants, the placement sites where our volunteer corps participants are working, the congregational initiatives, the things we're undertaking here, the work that our denominational partners are doing for good and justice in the world. There are so many ways to be involved in caring for the world. And on this Sunday before Thanksgiving, I am grateful for each of those places and groups and their ideas and their good work in the world. And so I want to extend an invitation to you and to me. Be engaged. To use Jeremiah's language, scattered flocks need attentive shepherds. Fractured lives and unrooted communities need compassionate seekers and doers of justice. So take that brochure home and read through it. If you feel called to tutor children, you can see that you can engage at Shaw Community Ministry or Marie Reed School, and I promise you that you will not just be doing math and science. You will be learning about lives of people who need love and compassion. If you're worried about homeless people in our community, you can volunteer at Bethesda Cares. One of the things they'll be doing soon is the point in time count, where volunteers go throughout Montgomery County to see where homeless people live and count them. I can promise you it's not just counting people in the dark of night. It is seeing how and where your life can be changed because you then know more about their lives. If you feel called to work for racial justice in our society, join the Potomac Association's Racial Justice Task Force. If global peace is your thing, Global Ministries of the Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, and the United Church of Christ would welcome you as a volunteer and advocate. Bake a casserole. Heck, make 100 casseroles. Sign a petition. Volunteer with kids. Do your part. Let me say a special word to those of you who are not as physically able as you would like to be, or as you once were. Maybe you can't drive or you can't do these things. If you take one of these agencies and just wrote a note to their staff once a month to thank them for their engagement in justice, I can promise you that the staff at Shaw Community Ministry or at SUM would be so thrilled for you to join with them in that simple way. Whatever it is that you can do and can keep doing, do that. Last week, Glenn Oakley offered me a Latin phrase on the way out the door. Agi quod agis, do what you do, or do what you are doing. That is, we don't have to reinvent ourselves. Even when the world seems uprooted, our call is clear. Be the church. Love. Show grace and forgiveness. Work for justice and peace. Be kind and compassionate. And then to put those large words into action, not having to reinvent how to do that either. We have the relationships with organizations and systems and connections and possibilities that are there for us to engage the world. We just have to connect. to do the work, to show up. Agi quod agis, do what you do. Now, in these troubled times, you may have to do more of what it is you can do. But do what you do. Our call is clear. We are to be Christians in the world. When that tree fell, and the woodworker turned it into communion pieces from Brad's parents' backyard, that tree did not stop being koa wood. It just found a different purpose. Instead of shade for parties or offering a branch for a swing, it is now a paten for bread, a chalice for juice. It's the same wood. It just has a new, refreshed purpose in the world. We are the same people. Our church is the same church. Yet God offers us a new deal, a new covenant, and invites us into that covenant. We do not have to recreate ourselves or the world. We simply live out our call. We do our work, knowing that God is recreating the world in us and through us. And so on this Sunday before Thanksgiving, for God's new covenant with us, I'm grateful. For the privilege of working with you and with God to live into our calling in the world, I am grateful. Thanks be to God. Amen.